I have to get going.
Keep going.
So we have a lot to do.
Good evening and welcome to the December 7th meeting of the Astoria Development Commission. We'll have a call to order. Chief.
Present.
Commissioner Herzig.
Here.
Commissioner Bryce.
Here.
And Chair.
Here. Okay. We'll forego reports of commissioners until we get to the regular meeting. Any changes to the agenda?
There are no changes.
Okay. Consent calendar involves just the minutes of the October 19th meeting, ADC meeting. Is any corrections or additions, or can we have a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We need a roll call. Okay.
Chief.
Ms. Tucker.
Commissioner Van Lua.
Aye.
Commissioner Herzig.
Aye.
Commissioner Price.
Aye.
Chair Lemieux.
Aye. Thank you. Our regular agenda items, the first one, 6A, is the EPA grant appropriation of matching funds.
So the City of Astoria has awarded an EPA grant for assessment and cleanup of the Heritage Square site in 2012. At the September 8th City Council meeting, an update was provided by our project consultants, and staff had noted that there would be a $40,000 cash match, which was required for the $400,000 grant, and this would be brought back to a subsequent Astoria Development Commission meeting. Since that time, the final contractor bids had been received for the cleanup of Heritage Square, and they were higher than anticipated. So the cost of cleanup, which is the actual bid from the contractor with a 5% contingency, was $238,324. I would note that there are an additional $109,842 needed to be able to conduct that cleanup. That includes the $40,000 match, which I'd referred to earlier. In your memo, there's a breakdown in terms of how this would be funded, including the $40,000 match, the additional approximately $70,000 of urban renewal funds, the approximately $40,000 from the capital improvement fund, which includes EPA grant reimbursement funds not allocated to the consultant, and the remainder in the EPA grant funds not distributed to the city. I would note that since the preparation of this memo, we have been contacted by the state of Oregon, the Business Oregon, that we should be receiving an approximately $60,000 grant. So this is about $60,000 additional that would be able to go to pay for not only the monitoring well, which is referred to in your memo, but also the remaining monies could be used for the cash match for this project. What we're needing this evening is the allocation of these funds so we can start moving forward with the cleanup while we proceed on with the formalization of the grant agreement with Business Oregon. Jeff Harrington is here. If there are any questions regarding the specific cleanup activities, he has been managing that part of the project. But tonight it's recommended that the commission approve the expenditure of $110,000 for the cleanup of Heritage Square. Staff will be bringing a revised contract to the city council at your next meeting to be able to increase the scope of work for the project, but we need the budget allocation this evening.
Okay, I have a question. Where does the 60,000, where will it sure. come from?
Sure. So within the memo, there's reference to the groundwater monitoring well that is approximately $25,000. That was not included in the budget because we were already informed that we'd probably be getting grant funds for that. So there would be $35,000, which would be able to be applied towards the cleanup match. We would be looking at reimbursing that in the through the capital improvement funds, which are included in the memo. So the bulk of the match would come from continue to come from the Astor East Urban Renewal District.
I'd like to follow up on that. Into which fund will the $60,000 when we receive it be deposited?
It would go into the capital improvement fund.
All right, thank you. Which is not the same as the Urban Renewal Fund.
That is not.
So I heard you saying two different things, actually.
So
you're saying some of the money would come from the Urban Renewal Fund, but the $60,000 will be allocated out of the capital improvement fund.
So if you'll note in your memo on page one, there's a breakdown of the of how the remaining project would be funded. There would be the original $40,000 match, which was required for the grant, out of Urban Renewal, an additional $70,000 from Urban Renewal. And then if you go to the second page, there's $39,842 through the Capital Improvement Fund. That's the City of Astoria Capital Improvement Fund. And all of the grant disbursements go into the Capital Improvement Fund. It's a $400,000 grant, and whenever the disbursements are made, they're deposited into the Capital Improvement Fund. So if we get another $60,000, it would also go into the Capital Improvement Fund of the City of Astoria.
All right. And as I'm reading this, we haven't fully spent the $60,000.
Oh, no, not at all. Okay. Because the cleanup is going to require an increase the scope of work, and that's what's going to need to be brought back to your December 21st City Council meeting to amend the contract with AMAC, which is our cleanup consultant, before the full cleanup work can even be completed.
Okay, well, that's certainly good news. Yep, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Estes, this certainly is more money than we were originally anticipating, but we aren't really left with any other options as I see it at this point. I mean, do we have any other options?
I mean the two options are, if we didn't allocate the additional funds at this point in time, what we would have to do is come back at a later time, go out to bid for a new contractor to be able to complete the work before we would get the letter of no further action. Staff feels that it makes sense to continue the work now rather than remobilize a new contractor in the future at potentially greater expense.
Okay, and there could be more future expenses, it looks like, if I'm reading the memo correctly, in that we may need to add a liner to the site, but that's unknown at this point.
Right, so it's all, Jeff, do you want to maybe address this? You know, what we're looking at is that once the cleanup is completed, there'll be kind of a final set of tests completed to determine if there's any final remediation required.
Jeff Harrington, city engineer. The liner concept is a little more complicated because it depends on what the use is going to be. So if we didn't do anything there and there was no human exposure, people going down there, they wouldn't identify a need to do something. But we talked before about a scenario where maybe there's a building, for example, and there's going to be people down there in mechanical rooms or basements, then they'd want to see something that would probably end up being a part of that construction anyways, like a concrete slab, which would suffice as a liner. Does that make sense?
Sort of.
Okay. What they're going to do when we're all done cleaning this up, they're going to do some validity tests, they call it, where they're going to come through and do final tests to make sure that they got everything. And we're going to get to a point where you can't take out any more because we start getting into the groundwater situation and in jeopardizing maybe the integrity of the structure down there because we're taking away too much soil. So if everything's clean, then the letter of no further action will not have any further restrictions like that. But if there is something left behind that they're concerned about, that they do not want people kicking up dust in their face, they will put in the no further action letter requirement that a liner be placed. It could end up being a thick plastic if it's certain types of use, and if it's going to be like a heavy use, like I said, somebody being down in a basement, they're going to want to see something more solid, like a concrete slab, which you'd probably put in a basement anyways. Mm-hmm. It's pretty rare to leave a basement just dirt with mechanical equipment and stuff.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions from the council?
Yes. The Urban Renewal District East Fund is the lowest level fund. There were about $350,000 in it at the beginning of the fiscal year. We're 5 months in. Do we know how much we have in it now?
So we do have a line item, an appropriation line item, that would accommodate this expense.
Yeah, I see that we have improvements other than buildings, $325,000. Could you just refresh my memory? Have we spent any of that yet this year, this fiscal year?
Only thing that we have spent so far is under the the contractual amounts for the work that we're doing for Heritage Square.
Right.
There may be some smaller, smaller items, but this is the Heritage Square focus is the largest.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to note for the minutes that Commissioner War has arrived, 6:12. Any other comments or questions from the council? Okay, we will open this to the public at this point. We would ask that you limit your remarks to 3 minutes to respect everyone's time. So if anyone has anything on this issue, you're welcome to come to the podium and state your name and address. Mr. McCartan.
Good evening, Your Honor, members of the council, members of the commission, I'm sorry, and Ms. Chairman, Chairperson. My name is George McCartan. I live at 490 Franklin Avenue in Astoria. I just had a couple short questions. One is, I'm sure it's legal, I don't see how you people sitting as the commission for the Urban Renewal District can allocate monies from that source essentially to the city when you're sitting also as councilors for the city. Somewhere it must be. If I'd have done my homework, I'm sure I would have found it, but it was a question in my mind as to, my understanding was urban renewal was supposed to go to private individuals for urban renewal and not necessarily to the public itself. The second question is, I think, even more serious. That is, have we ever made an attempt, even informally, without considering even litigation, against Safeway for a little help here in cleaning up what they left behind? Have we ever done that?
I don't know. I'll refer that to our city manager. Thank you, George.
So, Mr. McCartan, your first question, it's the Astoria Development Commission is a separate legal entity from the city of Astoria. Understood. Yes, it is legal for individuals who are elected to the city council to be able to also be the commissioners for the Astoria Development Commission. It's a fairly common scenario that you'll see throughout the state of Oregon where you'll have both parties doing that. And I'll tell you that in the city of Astoria's history, it's been more of the precedent that urban renewal funds have gone to public projects rather than private. There's probably been less private participation than public within our urban renewal districts. With regards to your question about Safeway, when the city of Astoria purchased that property from Safeway, there was due diligence which was completed, and also tests which were done to be able to acknowledge what generally was there, so that when the city of Astoria purchased it, they knew what they were getting into. I'll tell you that at least Safeway legally could have sold the property without cleaning up the site at all. And so, it's something that the city of Astoria needed to do their due diligence when making the purchase, but it was not a requirement. And really, the contamination came from earlier businesses, such as the predecessor of the Daily Astorian, which was on that site. A dry cleaner and an Oldsmobile dealership, which was there in advance of them.
Thank you very much.
Okay, any other comments from the audience? Okay, could we have a motion?
I'd like to mention that for the public, the thing we're waiting for is the letter from the DEQ, no further action. until that happens, we cannot move forward with any schemes of any sort about filling in the hole or anything like that. That's the missing part of this plan for the Heritage Square. Whatever the plan may be, we have to get the letter of clearance, the letter for no further action from DEQ, so all of this is working toward that goal. I move that the Astoria Development Commission approve the expenditure of $110,000 for the cleanup of the Heritage Square material, including the original $40,000 match and an additional $70,000.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Thank you. Okay, the next item is Heritage Square Phase 1 Feasibility Analysis Report.
So I'm going to turn this over to our Community Development Director, Kevin Cronin, and Kevin's going to give a presentation along with some representatives of the consultant team on this analysis.
Right, so you still want to dim the lights?
Sure.
Okay. So I've been pacing back and forth the last half hour, and as we dim the lights, I'm feeling more like an expectant father ready to enter the delivery room. So here I am, after a three-month gestation period, trying to present a very complex project to the Astoria Development Commission. So bear with us. My intent with the consultants is to present something to you in a fairly fast order so we can get to your questions. At the same time, I want to be very thorough. This is a very detailed project. So if we gloss over something, stop us. But we do want to kind of get through the presentation so we can get to your questions. So before I go any further, so Chelsea McCann with Walker Macy and Laura Klinger with Hacker Architects is going to help me with this presentation. I'm just going to kind of set the table here, and then they're going to kind of get into the project content. So obviously, this is a very important project for the City Council. It's the number one City Council goal. For the last 3 months, I've been tasked with investigating the feasibility of locating these three important uses right across the street. I get to actually look at it and present it at the same time. So we've been looking at a library, we've been looking at housing, we're looking at open space, and how to arrange those different things at this important site. This has been an education for me the last 3 months, as it has been for the audience and the general public. One of the challenges that I faced is that there wasn't a lot of common knowledge or common understanding of this project, as well as this being a City Council goal. So I spent a lot of time educating folks on why we were doing this project in the first place. Unfortunately, I don't have one true recommendation that is supported by the community, but what I do have is a lot of good information for the Astoria Development Commission to make a decision. There's a couple questions that I can answer right away. Is the site big enough for a library, housing, and open space? Yes, it is. Is this a great catalytic project sometime in the future? Yes, it is. Are there examples of doing this type of development in Oregon? Yes, there is. The key question that we're trying to answer tonight, however, is this the right place for all those things? And so that is our task tonight. So I'm going to jump right into the public process and how we got here. And I'd like to immediately acknowledge the mayor-appointed project advisory committee. And if you served on that committee, could you please stand so we can recognize you? So give a round of applause for you. I'll note that I didn't require them to come tonight, but they did such a good job. So Dan Stein, Kate Summers, Norma Hernandez, Cindy Mudge, Dulcie Taylor, and of course Sean Fitzpatrick. Who are we missing? Paul Caruana with the Historic Landmarks Commission, and Jenny Batention with Columbia Bank. And so I think I got everybody. So thank you very much for volunteering your time over the last 3 months. I really appreciate that. These guys had to meet four times at the flag room. These were very really good discussions and a good dialogue. However, they don't have a recommendation. Norma will be speaking on behalf of the Project Advisory Committee later. As you can see, we had lots of opportunities for people to get involved and make comments. We've had a public comment period since the end of the open house with different project displays. We have additional 46 comments that are actually in your packets. So with that, I am going to turn it over to the consultants.
Thank you.
You can give your name and address.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. Yes,
it's okay.
I'm Chelsea McCann. I live at 8570 Southwest Cecilia in Portland, Oregon. Thank you very much for having us here. So we are going to run through sort of an overview of the studies that we did. We presented these in fairly grand detail at the public open house on October 21st, and I know many of you were here. So again, as Kevin said, if there's anything we gloss over too quickly, please just let us know. So of course, here's the project area. I think if you're not familiar with where this is, you can just look out the window there. So it's a great position. And one of the things that we did at the beginning of this project was to really orient ourselves to the project site to understand where it is in the overall city. And of course, you have your main commercial areas on commercial and marine, but this is up, you know, to the south a bit, which is really where your civic core is. And that's why you have the City Hall here, you have the Garden of Surging Waves, and it's a really great position to kind of be the heart of the downtown civic community. At the onset of the project, the Project Advisory Committee set out and established a series of values that whatever the design was that we landed on, it should embody these. They included public access, economic redevelopment, community-focused design. This is about the community. This is about all of you. Sustainability, innovation in design, so finding new ways to develop, to use materials and create something really special. Create a space that's adaptable, that it doesn't just do one thing, but can be used for a lot of different ways. Something that's historically representative and significant, and also that integrates into the overall city with the Garden of Surging Waves and some of the other elements around it. So when the design team set out, because this was a very fast process for design, we wanted to just get some ideas out there and get those in front of the community, in front of all of you, and see how you felt about them. And so that was how we tackled the process. And we broke the overall site into three areas. So the first one was the streetscape. So we looked at the streets that surround the site and what were ideas that we could put out to the community about how you might rethink about how your streetscapes work to make them more pedestrian-oriented, more inviting, and maybe they reflect the development of the site. So we put together some ideas that had to do with the possibility of improving the streetscape, creating places for people to sit, pedestrian-friendly environments, and potentially even put out the idea of festival streets, which is a curbless street where there is a no grade elevation between the sidewalk and the streetscape, so that on days when you have festivals or events, your open space can actually expand into the street. You can separate those, and you don't have issues of accessibility for people to flow through those. So those were just some of the ideas that we put out there. Overwhelmingly, the idea of festival streets was very exciting to people, and it's something that we would consider going forward.
I'm Laura Klinger with Hacker Architects. I'm at 3014 Northeast 23rd Ave in Portland. And I really focused on the building component of the study. And so many of you were at the open house, and we had a lot of images of current library design from around the world, really to start to inspire your community and thinking about some of the spaces that could be in the building. It's an exciting time in libraries right now, a lot of change, but it's a great opportunity for your community to build a real 21st century library and really be the center and heart of your community. You have the site for it right here, right in that civic area, as Chelsea noted. The idea that we were dealing with was, the proposal was to combine a ground floor of a library with likely three stories of housing above. And the image on the left is a project that my firm did in Portland about 10 years ago. It's the Hollywood Library in Portland, which is on the ground floor with three stories above, so about the same scale as we're looking at here. The first thing we did was look at the actual existing library site and think about options for it. So the first one at the top is you could potentially take down the existing library and build your new 18,000 square foot library in its place. So that's just, obviously there's no design here, it's just representing a new, brand new building on that site. And the 18,000 square foot library comes from a whole programming effort that superseded our study that targeted that square footage for your library as appropriate to the scale of your community. And then the second one, the middle image, is a diagram showing you could renovate the existing building and build a new one-story addition in the existing parking. So that would get you your 18,000 square foot library on one floor. The challenge with that site is you would be taking over the parking lot, and it would not likely make sense to build underground parking in that scenario as the footprint of the new building is so small. Option one, you could have underground parking to serve the library beneath the new building. And then option three is just talking about if we relocate the library to Heritage Square, what can you do with the existing library building? So one of the ideas is that the city could renovate it to a new use. There were some ideas that were thrown out in the open house of a daycare facility, adult education for community college. There's lots of opportunities there. You could also sell it to another party that could then develop the existing building into a new use, or sell it to another party who could take it down and build a new building in its place and use that money to fund the new library project. And then we studied the new site of bringing the library with the housing to Heritage Square. And these are not in any way building designs. These are just massing and configurations just to try and start to understand what kind of form and what kind of space the library and the housing would take and what that would mean for the open space around it, which Chelsea will talk to a little bit more detail. But in each scenario, whether it's option A, B, or C, they're all propose a ground floor, one story, 18,200 square foot library. That's the orange piece. And in each of those scenarios, we tried to pull at least some of the building out so it wasn't underneath the library, underneath the housing, so you could get skylights and maybe a double height library space in each version. And then you get three stories of housing, which is the blue component, in different configurations above the library. And that goes to the 45 foot maximum height limit. So that's sort of maxing out the height that you can build on the site. And in each of the three scenarios, we've just made the assumption that the American Legion building stays. And so you can see the different kind of relationships of the open space to the existing Garden of Surging Waves as well. And in each of these three scenarios also, you would potentially could have underground parking beneath the building. So we've kind of targeted about 30,000 square feet of housing and then likely about a 20,000 square foot parking lot underneath the building.
All right, so the last segment that we looked at was the open space. And really, as Laura mentioned, depending on the building configuration, you have different configurations of how much open space remains and how that's set up and how large it is. So at the onset of the project, we began knowing that the Garden of Surging Waves, when they did their design work, they put out some conceptual concept of what might happen on this site. So we were charged with beginning to take that the next step further. And one of the things that we wanted to do at the open house was to really engage in a conversation with the community to start to see what kind of program elements they want to see in the open space. How should it be used? What kind of activities do they want to do there? Because that can influence how big of a space you need and how that would be taken up. So during the open house, we broke it down by doing a number of things, one of which was asking questions, putting out ideas of things that could happen there, whether those were reading gardens or a large plaza or an amphitheater. And got feedback from the community. People were able to vote and sort of say what they preferred and elements that they preferred. And then we also took the time to look at just putting out three concepts based on those building configurations that Laura was talking about. We looked at how we could configure the site, how we might conceive it in different ways, and allowed people to provide responses to that as well. You know, as you'll see in option A, for example, the public open space and the gathering space that you might see as a plaza or a green garden is about half the size of the other two, because we've decided in that one we suggested that maybe part of the site becomes a surface parking lot. So they were just different ways to look at that open space and let people kind of start generating ideas and imagining what this place could be in the future and what really resonated with them. The truth of it was, through all of this and all the voting, we worked, you know, we spent the whole day with this wonderful, very passionate community, and there was no clear direction. That there was a lot of pros and cons to all of them, and at the end of the day, what we really got from it was people were excited about the open space, but didn't necessarily feel like A was better than B or B was better than C. So it was a really great day and a great way to look at it, but as Kevin said, it didn't come out with a clear and obvious answer and probably merits more discussion in the future.
So I want to put Heritage Square into a proper context. I think, at least for me, when I get into a project, I sort of drill down into the weeds and you sort of lose focus on, like, why are we spending all this time and resources on Heritage Square? So the next couple of slides are gonna help kind of get out to more of a 30,000 square foot level and really kind of think about this. So obviously we have the existing library site. We have another asset in the 13th Street lot. We have an idea in terms of how to fix that up. And of course, Heritage Square, we have the Garden of Surging Ways just across the street right here, as well as the rest of Heritage Square. The blue box obviously is the American Legion. So what's going on around the site? What has happened? What is gonna happen? Women's Resource Center is going under renovation right now. I tried to reach out to Jason Schimmerhorn to see to get an update on that. I did not get a response, but the contractors have been over there working on it for the last few months. We also have a food pod that's popping up. That is what I call an indicator species. It is, if you're a foodie, it's a great place to go and check out some new food options in the downtown. And so that's a good sign that we've got a food pod happening across from here from City Hall. We also have Columbia Bank. Jenny's been forthright with me in saying we're not sure what the future holds for Columbia Bank at that location. So that's why that there's that question mark there. And of course, the city has invested in the Liberty Theater. And I believe there's a presentation on that tonight. And then as well as the Museum of Whimsy and the Banker Suite. So according to the owner, she is expecting to open up a new museum sometime here in 2016. So we'll see if that happens. But it's a beautiful building that's been restored, and I think she's ready to share it with the rest of the public. And then we have a new group who has bought the old YMCA building, and they are gutting it and doing some demo. And hopefully they're gonna be restoring it to its former glory. I got a sneak peek at what they've done. It's pretty amazing, some of the stuff that they've been able to discover in there. And then finally, Brett just shared that we have a date for the Senior Center. Would you like to announce that, Brett?
So the construction on the Senior Center will be complete in approximately 30 days, and a ribbon cutting ceremony date has been established by the Senior Center Board, and that will be on Tuesday, February 16th. They're wanting a little bit of time to be able to move furniture in. They purchased some new furnishings, and they want to get it all set up before they have the open house.
So it's been a lot of fun for me to just kind of see this project unfold. And it reminded me of to look at all the investments that Astoria has made in its downtown. If you look at the Senior Center, the Liberty, and some of the other investments we've made, it totals up to about $6.2 million. That's a significant investment that we've made in the downtown area, and that's really just really impressive to me. This next slide is really about what are the project impacts, or another way of saying it, what is the business case for Heritage Square? Why are we spending all this time? So when you're talking about investment potential, revitalizing the downtown, or trying to increase pedestrian safety, all those things are City Council goals. And so I've tried to tie some of these things to your goals for this year. The financial impact is something else to consider. If we want to continue to pay back the notes on the tax increment financing, i.e. urban renewal, having something that's going to help pay back and assess value will certainly be very helpful. From an urban design perspective, we have just an absolutely incredible street on 12th Street, and we have an opportunity to continue that. And of course, you're making really strategic investments, and the economic development potential is also a consideration. So with that, the number one question that I've got in the last 3 months is, how much is it going to cost? So I know all these folks want to see that, right? So I'm going to let Chelsea show me the money.
All right, thank you. So we were asked to put together an order of magnitude estimate, which is really what we consider a high-level cost estimate, just to sort of understand and frame what we expect the cost to be in different areas of the site. This information is informed by conversations we've had by the city, our experience on recent and comparable projects, and then tailored by what we heard through those public open houses and things to sort of get our heads around the quality of the space and sort of how it should look and what kind of materials might be out there. Now, see, I know you thought I was going to show you the price, but we'll get there. So what's important to understand is, again, this is very early in the process. So if you see the red dashed line, that's really where we are. Everything past that line are future steps that you would take that can take, you know, future months and years to get through the actual design process, get through real, you know, heavy public engagement and make sure you really develop a great space and then get it built. So those are future things that would happen. And each of the little stars that you see are points in time where you might revisit this cost estimate. And so although we have this very high-level estimate at this point in the future, that would get drilled down to be more specific to what you actually want to build, and it will get more accurate as things go on. It will be less of a range and more of a specific number. One of the things that's also important to understand is when we look at the order of magnitude estimate, that also includes a percentage that we consider for soft costs. Soft costs are things like design fees or permitting fees. And so we put in a number that covers that sort of piece of it. And then we also have a contingency percentage. And we worked with the city to develop what we thought would be an appropriate percentage for this site, considering the level of design and what we know at this stage, and also because of some of the specific engineering complications in working in Astoria having to do with how your structural system works, to make sure that the numbers that you see would be all-inclusive of these things, so they aren't the number plus something else. This is the number. So now I'll show you the numbers. So the first step that we looked at was really thinking about there may be a desire to do an interim development. You have a big hole on the site right now, and you have to fill the pit. Okay. So even if you want to build an amphitheater, you're still going to have to fill that a considerable amount, nearly all the way, to make that even be an accessible space. So filling the pit is critical. It would have to be done for any design. And we worked with the city to understand what that would take. There is some structural implications to that, to actually build walls and then actually fill the soil up to bring it up. That potentially allows you actually to then, maybe you can even use the site for a while and have sort of an interim concept in there that would allow people to get in there and get the fences down, which would be fantastic. In the future then, we look at those areas that we spoke about before. So we look at the open space and we came up with numbers that range between 3.4 and 4.5 million. That are based on, that could vary depending on the quality of the space and the, you know, whether you're using stone or concrete for paving, whether you have a parking lot on part of the site, or if you pave the whole thing with beautiful stonework. It can vary quite a bit, so that's why we provided you with a range. The streetscape, this includes the idea of potentially doing festival streets. You'd be at the lower end if you were looking at maybe doing that kind of application on 12th along the site, because it's a much smaller distance than if you were to do that on Duane, which is the longer portion of the block. The library costs, so this is for the library building itself, that one-story 18,000 square foot space, ranging from 10.2 to 13.3 million. The housing above that, again, it's that three stories of housing that we were anticipating, ranging from 8.2 to 10.6 million. And then the parking, and this is referring to the parking structure below the garden, below the building, ranging from 5.2 to 6.2 million.
So I want to close with just a kind of a summary of what's called sources and uses. Chelsea just reviewed the use side in terms of how much it's going to cost. What are some of the funding sources that city staff would go after in order to sort of fill the gap. Not fill the hole, but fill the gap. So we obviously have a lot of candidates under the public side of the equation, and then we have a couple under the private. Under the public, those things are pretty common to you as the Historic Development Commission or City Council. Those are things that you typically see in a city budget. The one that I would call out is, earlier version. So I have been talking to a representative at the USDA Rural Development Loan Program, and that's just another source of funds that's out there for us to consider. So, and we would continue to look at additional funds if council authorized us to move forward. However, the largest portion of this is a capital campaign, whether you're talking about the library or open space, and that is why you're seeing such a large number there. And on the left-hand side, we've broken it out to the different uses so you can sort of pick and choose what it is that you're looking for. I can go into more detail with questions on that particular aspect. At this time, I think we are ready to take your questions.
Questions from the council?
Well, Mr. Cronin, I'm glad to hear that you were like an expectant father going into the delivery room and that you're taking this project so seriously. How would a public-private partnership help to benefit us in terms of the costs if say a private developer were to develop the housing, because I think that was our idea going into this feasibility study.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go back to that sources and uses table. So there, you notice under the private contribution, there's an estimated private developer contribution. So anytime you do a public-private partnership, the developer is going to have skin in the game. And so they do that through a couple ways. They have their own money, the equity side, typically somewhere between 10 and 20% of a total project. And then you have the debt side. They go to a bank, they go to other sources of capital in order to fill what's called a capital stack, or the amount of money they need to actually get the project done. So that is going to be their contribution to the project. There's still going to be a gap, and so that's where the city would have to play a role in order to fill that gap. But on the housing side, the gap is much smaller because you have a private developer that's providing those contributions. Does that answer your question, Councilor?
What percentage of the total cost would that be then from a private developer?
So I can't speak to this specific project, but generally speaking, the projects that I'm familiar with in my experience in Portland is that the gap is somewhere in the 20% range. So 60% is coming from private financing, a bank, i.e. a bank. 20% is coming from the developer equity side, and so the city is filling in that last 20%. That's typically what you see for a housing deal.
Questions, Councilor
Nimmerwell? In terms of a capital campaign, can you define what you mean by that?
So, not an expert on capital campaigns, but we are blessed with having two foundations here in Astoria, one for parks and one for library. And so they would be leading those respective campaigns. I believe we'll have somebody here from the library side to talk about the Library Foundation later tonight. And I don't think we'll have somebody from the park side, but maybe Angela can speak to that.
Okay. And do you think that, I mean, these costs do seem a little bit high. Do you think that it is possible theoretically to scale back any aspects of the project, such as costly underground parking or fancy streetscaping?
Yeah, so one of the things that we wanted to show you is the all-in cost, and that's what Chelsea was saying. So we're not having to add more at this point. It's all scaling back. So the ADC and City Council have the options of scaling back. So whether that's the streetscape budget or the underground parking, you have that choice as a commission.
Questions from the council?
Could I ask a follow-up question?
Sure, go ahead.
If I may, Councilor Nemlin will, just jumping in on this
Please
one.
Please do.
Our financial director very kindly provided us with a history of the expenses in Heritage Square, and the summary of the total expenses on the Garden of Surging Waves is $2,055,600. That includes the Mulvaney design for over $300,000, all the bells and whistles, $2,055,000. We're seeing up here, open space and fill, your low estimate is $3,800,000. Where in the, I'm sorry, but it's like if
right.
the Garden of Surging Waves can come in at under $3 million, what in the world are you planning to put in the pit?
Yeah, so I did some quick math on that. Looking at the total cost and dividing it by the square footage of the site, it's about $156 per square foot. What did we come out with the open space? Do you know?
With the contingency, we range between 130 and 145.
So we're in. So we're actually within that range of what it costs to do the Garden of Surging Waves.
Well, I certainly don't think we want a second garden to the east side of the Garden of Surging Waves, so that figure must come down, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yes, this is a highly finished public plaza.
Kevin, also with the open space, is it correct that also that figure includes infrastructure underneath
yes.
The open space, which may require some engineering and some filling of spaces they're currently
It was definitely an education for me coming to Astoria, is that what you don't see is what you're paying for a lot of times. It's all the stuff underneath that has to support what you want to see above ground. So that is absolutely correct.
Okay. Commissioner Price or Commissioner Ward, do you have anything before Commissioner Nimblewell has another question?
No, let her ask it. That's fine with me.
Okay. I remembered a question that I had when I saw Jonah Dart McLean, our parks maintenance supervisor, standing at the back of the room. Have there been any cost estimates on maintenance of open space? Because, boy, the city has an issue right now with projects occurring with no look at how much it's going to cost us in
That's
the
right.
future for maintenance.
I don't have one. I'll let Chelsea speak to that. Angela has definitely shared her concern about maintenance costs for any new open space that we put over there. And so we're going to work together more closely when we do future cost estimates, that we build maintenance into a future cost estimate so you have a fully loaded look. Chelsea, do you want to try to tackle that one?
I don't know if I can tackle it right now, but really what ends up happening is with the open space, what's important is doing those studies early, and they can be wildly influenced by what you build. So the way you maintain a stone plaza with some trees in it is much different from how you maintain a garden with a lot of perennials and grass that needs to be mowed. So what's important is understanding at the next stage in that design process is have those conversations early about what the city is capable of doing, and then start to understand what those ongoing costs are moving forward in the years so that you walk in eyes open based on what you want to build.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor,
yes.
I do have one question. On the sources, uses
yes.
page,
mm-hmm.
vertical development funding gap, the total gap, 15.7 to 22.2 million. And then on the sources for low cost estimate, capital campaign is basically those same numbers, and then the private developer is about 5.8 million. So is the total gap really the 15, say, plus the 5, but then the five is coming from a private developer?
So if I'm reading this correctly, the capital campaign is the amount that we would need to fund for the library, right, the vertical, as well as whatever is not funded by the private developer on the housing.
So a capital campaign.
So it's
of,
the net yeah. of the housing plus the library.
Right, got it. It's a lot of money.
Kay, did you have a...
Yes, please. I appreciate all the work that has gone into this report, and I know you were on a very short time frame kind of thing. Without being too confrontational, when the city authorized spending $16,000 for this report, we were told that you would present us with one preferred option. There was no escape clause in that, saying the community would not be in consensus or the advisory panel would not have a recommendation. We were told we would get one preferred option. Apparently, you're not prepared to do that. Again, I was not informed that the advisory council would have any sort of veto power on any recommendations of the council, so that's kind of news to me. But I think I would like to have a preferred option from you, kind of thing. I really would. $16,000, that's what we paid for.
Thank you.
If I could ask the council, is there any aspect of this that we could delete right now?
Well, maybe perhaps, Mayor, if we could. Kevin is prepared to walk the Development Commission through a set of questions that could help maybe structure consensus or where there is agreement. If you want, we can continue with questions. You could take public comment, because I know that there are individuals who have who are prepared to speak from the advisory committee and also from other groups, and there are other individual citizens who called my office today wanting to be able to speak. And Kevin would be prepared to run through that exercise at any point in time you'd wish.
So I have a public testimony slide next for both Kate Summers with the Library Board, as well as Norma Hernandez with the Parks Board, who is representing the Project Advisory Committee.
Okay, well, let's proceed that way then.
Okay.
I'd also like to mention that we will be changing over to the City Council meeting at 7, but the Development Commission will reconvene after the City Council meeting, so we will not be shortcutting this discussion tonight. Is that the mayor's wish? Yes. So stay tuned.
And so you will notice there is a clock on the screen, and we are asking everyone to please stick to the 3-minute limit.
Hey,
thank you.
Chief, if you could raise the lights back up as well, please.
But I look so much better. In light. Whoa, like Sears. good evening. Norma Hernandez, 92335 Youngs River Road. I am sorry that we disappoint you, but one of the things, I actually don't believe that we disappoint our community, because you gave us a task. We were chosen to try to see what the community really wanted, and we don't have that answer. And I think a $16,000, yes, is a lot of money, but when you have 10,000 people that not all of them are able to give you an opinion, to share what their expectations, what their options are, that it's really something that it's worth a lot of money. And the respect of our community to know that when you give us that responsibility, we're taking it seriously. We're looking at it from every single way, from every single angle. We are not anti-library. I even went to the Seaside Library and said, what is it that is required? And I was told 18,000 square feet is actually too small for our town. So we did our homework. We love libraries, but we don't know if at this moment the city is ready, the community is ready, unless you give them more information. They need a longer amount of time to look into their options, to give their opinions to you. Do you really want a quick answer, or do you want something that is something that you're gonna be proud of and is your legacy? This is your legacy, this is a big project. So this is not to be really taking 3 months and make a decision. And I know people are gonna tell you, oh, we have that hole for so long, we've been talking about it for so long, because we wanna make the right decision. Like I told Kevin in the beginning, to make a real delicious dish is gonna take you hours. If you want Campbell's soup, in 1 minute you can have it. Guess what, we don't want Campbell's soup. We want a delicious dish that smells good, that tastes good, and every day we can say, yeah, I'm eating this because I love it, because this is what my community did to me. So no, we don't have it, and please, yes, we are not anti-library, but I think your community needs to give you more input, and you should cherish that. You should honor that they want to really have more opinions. If 400 people answer a board from the library poll to see what they wanted it, what happened with the other 9,000 people? Because that was not even 1,000. So that's the number that we have to think of. Yes, We want a new library. I don't know if that's the right place. I don't know if that's the right moment. But please listen to your community and see what is it that they really want and give them a little longer time. But I think you will get a happier community.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Time's ticking. All right. Option C. My name is Kate Summers. I was proud to represent the library board. I'm going to do a slightly different summary since Norma summarized our PAC committee. I can speak specifically to the capital campaign, and I have a prepared statement which I would be happy to submit to you later on. Fundraising seminar summary for our city council. The library director and members of Friends, Foundation, and advisory boards attended the Public Library Division of the Oregon Library Association fundraising workshop all day on a Saturday last October at the Tigard Public Library. The presenters Peter Pearson and Sue Hall from Library Strategies led our group in presentations and discussions on aspects of a 21st century library, distinct roles of staff, trustees, friends, and foundations, funding modern libraries, and finally, best practices for friends and foundations. Library Strategies shared resources for development planning designed to assist library foundations in creating a development plan for annual fundraising and capital campaigns. Pearson and Hall said capital campaigns are the most fun, but also a major endeavor. They recommended creating a capital campaign steering committee within our foundation and to start early with annual giving efforts if a capital campaign is upcoming. We were there to learn as much as possible about fundraising for the benefit of our Astoria Library and came away with new tools and knowledge of how to reach our goals. Many of the people that attended are here today, if you just raise your hand, library supporters and those of us that will be fundraising. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. Okay, anyone else like to speak to the proposal? Okay.
My name is Patsy Ozer. I live at 254 West Irving Avenue. I have been reading aloud to classes of school children for more than 25 years, first as a teacher librarian in Chicago Public Schools, and for the last 4 years here in Astoria. I read to every class at Astor each week during the school year. I work 3 full days a week. I do it for free. That's how strongly I believe in the lifelong benefits of reading to children. In all the recent discussions about the Astoria Library, 3 points stand out. Number 1, there is surprisingly little disagreement over the need for a new or renovated public library. 2, the social and economic benefits to downtown in general and Duane Street in particular would be roughly equal were a new library located at 10th Street or 12th Street. And number 3, the financing requirements for any solution are poorly understood by all concerned, and I include myself in this generalization. To move forward productively, 3 concepts of renovation, in-place renovation, including the Waldorf, the library plus housing at Heritage Square should be reviewed and contrasted based on these 3 points. The comparison must put financial considerations up front. What specifically can the city contribute in terms of cash on hand, bonding capacity, and ongoing operating costs? The city's finance department should be charged with this analysis. It should include costs of moving and operating the library during construction, if that were necessary, and of operating a new library on 1 or 2 levels. Number 2, what specific steps are necessary to acquire the Waldorf, and what is necessary to prepare the east end of Heritage Square? The city's engineering department should be charged with this analysis. Number 3, what specifically will the economic benefits of a new library at 10th or 12th be? This limited scope of work should be contracted to a library or urban consultant like Ruth Metz or Michelle Reeves, both of whom are familiar with Astoria. Number 4, A careful consideration of what non-municipal financing is really possible should be undertaken. Kevin should assemble a volunteer team of persons with philanthropic, public, and private real estate development and financial expertise. In conclusion, the implementation of this plan, or one similar to it, would allow the postponement of a decision on Heritage Square instead of it being voted up or down prematurely. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. That was perfect. Okay, we've now reached the magic hour of 7, so we will be going into our regular city council meeting at this point. We will resume the development commission meeting after following. Okay, so we will recess the development commission meeting at this point, and then we will call to order the Astoria City Council.